You may find it difficult to believe that even during the medieval era, people were able to summon great enthusiasm for such topics, accompanied as they were by Aquinas's copious dissertations on their pros and cons, together with ample quotations from the philosopher, Aristotle, and other long-dead authorities. But you would be wrong. During this period, vast numbers of monasteries were scattered throughout the length and breadth of Europe, many in extremely remote locations. Within the confines of these so-called abstemious and celibate institutions, the lower orders did most of the turnip-picking and beer-tasting, leaving the intellectuals to combat the disease that reached epidemic proportions throughout monastic Europe, namely axidy, often known as the sickness of monks, better known to us as stupefying apathy or sloth. Under such circumstances, Aquinas's long and earnest discussions on whether the body is commanded by the soul in irrational animals, the bodily condition and identity of those who rise again after death, and whether we should love our body out of charity, must indeed have proved riveting topics. Fortunately, Aquinas was interested in writing something more than Christianity's answer to the Talmud. Amidst all the rabbinical nitpicking, there are passages which reveal a mind in a class of its own, whose thought is way ahead of its time. Take, for instance, Aquinas's discussion of whether pain or sorrow is assuaged by every pleasure. He begins by quoting the philosopher. Sorrow is driven out by pleasure, either by a contrary pleasure or by any other, as long as it is intense. Aquinas then argues, a pleasure is a kind of repose of the appetite in a suitable good, while sorrow arises from something unsuited to the appetite. He concludes, in a passage whose slightly outdated approach should not be allowed to obscure its insight, a person can find himself filled with sadness when he takes part in some pleasant activity which he used to share with a friend who is now absent or dead. Under such circumstances, there are two causes within him which produce contradictory effects. The thought of his friend's absence causes sorrow to well up in him. On the other hand, his life in the immediate present, participating in pleasant activity, is a cause of pleasure. Each of these causes in some way modifies the other, but our perception of the present is stronger than our memory of the past. Also, our love of self is more persistent than our love for another. Thus, in the end, our pleasure drives out our sorrow. Here, Aquinas reveals psychological acumen while miraculously remaining within an orthodox religious standpoint, which also agrees with his Aristotelian philosophy. Writing insightful psychology is difficult enough, especially in the language of a pre-psychological era. Writing psychology, which is at the same time also theology and philosophy, is a major intellectual juggling trick. This brings us to Aquinas's moral philosophy. Once again, he adopts the common-sense Aristotelian approach. Aristotle and Aquinas saw human happiness as the goal of all in this life. Sailing through life with this attitude may carry one perilously close to the reefs of unorthodoxy and even heresy, though Aquinas had sufficient skill and psychological acumen to disguise this awkward fact.